Welcome to SCOTUSCast, GPS Tracking and Fourth Amendment Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On January 23, 2012, the Supreme Court announced its decision in United States v. Jones. The question in this case is whether police officers' warrantless installation and use of a GPS tracking device on a suspect's vehicle violates the Fourth Amendment. A lower court had reversed the defendant's conviction on the grounds that the admission of the evidence obtained from the GPS violated the Fourth Amendment. By a vote of 9-0, the Supreme Court affirmed the lower court's judgment. Justice Scalia, joined by Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Kennedy, Thomas, and Sotomayor, had held for the majority that the government's attachment and use of the GPS was a search for the purposes of the Fourth Amendment. Justice Sotomayor also filed a separate concurring opinion. Justice Alito, joined by Justices Ginsburg, Breyer, and Kagan, filed an opinion concurring in the judgment, but relying upon a different rationale. To discuss the case, we have Paul Rosenzweig, who is the principal and founder of Red Branch Law and Consulting, PLLC. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Rosenzweig.
My name is Paul Rosenzweig, and in this podcast, we're going to discuss the recently decided U.S. Supreme Court case, United States versus Antoine Jones. This case is either the most significant Fourth Amendment case of the last two or three decades, or perhaps one of the least consequential. It's really too early to tell. It may either mean the death of something called the third party doctrine, which has been around now for about 60 years as part of the fabric of the Fourth Amendment, and a move to a new doctrine called the Mosaic Doctrine, or it may just be a blip on the radar. And we won't really know about that until the doctrine in the Supreme Court has developed further. My agenda for this little podcast is simple. I want to review the facts of the case, since as lawyers we always talk about the case. I want to give you a little history of the third-party doctrine, describe this mosaic theory, and then conclude with a little bit of crystal ball gazing about what the future might hold. So let's start with the case. Antoine Jones was a drug dealer. We know this with a relatively high degree of certainty because the federal investigation tied him to a stash house in Maryland with a significantly large quantity of drugs hidden there, from which he took them for sale. So we know that Antoine Jones was connected to a criminal drug enterprise. The reason we know this is what's significant about the Jones case. Jones's attachment to the stash house was developed through the use of a GPS tracker, a global positioning system tracker that had been attached to his car. You're probably familiar with a GPS. You may very well have one in your car in the form of a Garmin to give you directions to where you want to go. What's different, of course, is that the GPS tracker attached to Mr. Jones's car was attached by the federal government without his knowledge or consent. It was there for 28 days, monitoring his conduct, comings and goings through the entire month, and most significantly, of course, the federal government attached the tracker to his car without securing a warrant. Actually, they got a warrant, but it expired. So everybody treated this as a case where no warrant had been issued. What the government got from this GPS tracker was essentially a complete record of everywhere that Mr. Jones went during that month. So let's take a little sidelight and think about what that means. Back in the 1980s, the Supreme Court developed a doctrine known as practical obscurity. It comes from a case called Reporters Committee versus the Department of Justice. The department was in the business of collecting information from criminal records around the country and assembling this in a giant database. Now, this was at the dawn of the computer era, so they had to literally go physically to every courthouse and every prosecutor's office and every prison and get the records of the people they were interested in, which, of course, at the time were high-value criminals, people who they were particularly interested in, like mafia dons and the like. And this is the origin of our current NCIC, National Criminal Information Center database, that collects the criminal records of everybody who's been charged or convicted of a crime in America. Now, all of these records are public in the courts and in the prosecutor's office, you know, under standard First Amendment doctrine. So a bunch of reporters, the Reporters Committee, had this really great idea. They said, why don't we just file a FOIA request and get the assembled database from the Department of Justice? Because after all, the public records don't become private just because the government has assembled them. You'd think that that would be a pretty strong argument. They lost 9-0. The reason they lost 9-0 was because back at the dawn of this computer era, the Supreme Court said that Americans' sense of privacy was entitled to this concept of practical obscurity. The fact that the public records were in fact available in a lot of disparate databases wasn't the same as it all being assembled in one place and analyzed in one form. Today, we have the opposite. We have what computer scientists call the era of big data, where in effect you can download an entire month's worth of travel for an individual, or in theory a year's worth of travel for an individual, and use that and analyze that to develop a systematic understanding of the patterns of their travel, which is precisely what the government did to Mr. Jones. So that's how the case came to be in the court, and the court ruled for Mr. Jones unanimously, 9-0. But what's interesting in the case is that there were three separate opinions, each of which addressed a different aspect of Jones's claim. The majority opinion, which is the simplest one to understand, held clearly that because the government had intruded upon Mr. Jones's property rights by attaching the GPS to his car, they needed a warrant before they could actually interfere with his property. That was a simple opinion written by Justice Scalia, and it garnered 5 votes. If that were all that the case was, Jones would indeed be relatively inconsequential. But what has excited everybody and what has made this a useful thing to think about is the other two opinions. The first was a 4-justice concurrence authored by, of all people, Justice Alito, in which he adopted something called the mosaic theory, about which we'll talk about in a moment, but which essentially said this idea of big data is a big change, and we really want to examine whether or not the reasonable expectations of people's privacy have changed over time such that we should require a warrant for the collection of large amounts of data. And the other opinion was another concurrence by Justice Sonia Sotomayor, in which she said that she would even go so far as to reconsider the third-party doctrine, which has been the ground foundation of all modern criminal investigation. So let's talk about that for a minute. What is the third-party doctrine? The third-party doctrine essentially says that as a matter of Fourth Amendment law, individuals have no privacy interest as against government intrusion in information that they voluntarily convey to a third party. The original case was a case called U.S. versus On Lee in 1952, so it's just 60 years ago now, in which the Supreme Court considered whether or not there were privacy expectations in a conversation between two people where one of them was an undercover informant who was wearing a wire. The court said no, that the expectation of privacy in that context was far-fetched and that no Fourth Amendment violation was required. We saw that doctrine develop in the 1970s in two cases known as Miller and Smith, which applied that same doctrine not to conversations, but to information. Miller was a banking case and Smith was a telephone number case. And the court held in both instances that if you give your banking information, say, to your bank and tell them who you want a check to be drawn to, then the bank in turn is under no constitutional obligation to keep that information secret when faced with a request from the government. It might be under some statutory obligation, but as a matter of constitutional law, the government needed no warrant to go to the bank and get that information. Likewise, in Smith, the court drew a line between the telephone number, which you have to tell a phone company in order for the call to be connected, and the contents of the phone call itself. We've expanded that in many instances, and most appropriately for the Jones case, there were 2 cases earlier, late last century, Cairo and Knotts, in which the government used radio beepers to track people traveling in cars on the public highways. And the court there reasoned, and by now you can probably predict what it said, that because you were traveling on a public highway, where you were exposing your movements to the public's observation, you had no reasonable expectation of privacy in concealing those movements, and thus the government needed no warrant in order to use a radio tracker to track your movements. In both of those cases, by the way, the tracker was put in with the consent of somebody, so there was no property interest requirement, as happened in Jones. There things stood, and they have, as I said, become the foundation of all of our criminal investigation. Imagine if we needed a warrant before we could send an informant in to talk to drug dealers, for example. That would really be a sea change in how things go. So things stood until the development of big data. And with the development of big data came a competing idea, the mosaic theory. The mosaic theory is simple. It's named after the tile mosaics on floors. And it means that little pieces paint a big picture, which is to say that every individual thing might, of its own, tell you nothing about an individual. But if you collect a large sum of data about an individual, you learn much more than any individual piece. This is reality, as anybody knows. Anybody who's ever seen a punctilious painting by Seurat knows that little dots of paint can accumulate into a really beautiful picture. In the case of somebody being followed for 28 days, you can learn whether or not they regularly attend AA meetings, whether they're churchgoers, whether they go to the gym often, that sort of thing. Or to take a hypothetical posed by the lower court in Jones, if you know that a woman has gone to a doctor, that's one thing. If you know that she's gone to a store that sells baby clothes, that's another. If you know that she went to the doctor and then directly to the baby store immediately afterwards, you maybe learn something different altogether. It's precisely for this reason that when the government is responding to FOIA requests, it refuses to disclose individual pieces of information on the grounds that they can be accumulated into a mosaic that reveals more than the sum of the parts, right? So that's where we are, and that's what this case has brought to the fore. The majority property rights view of Justice Scalia was a throwaway, and that's an easy one. But that is not going to really decide the issue. We have plenty of other ways of collecting big data about people. Your cell phone, for example, says where you are every 10 seconds to the nearest three towers, so you can be geolocated without interfering with your property rights. So that's not going to answer the big question. If we go down the road of eliminating the third-party doctrine altogether, we will work this sea change in how we address the government's ability to conduct investigations. On the other hand, if, as Justice Alito wants us to do, we consider whether or not at some point too many points of information are collected and too clear a mosaic is created, then we will be developing what is literally a new theory of Fourth Amendment law. Looking to the future, I don't see a lot of prospect that the third-party doctrine dies. It's simply too integral to everything that we do. But the mosaic theory is exceedingly plausible and has the advantage of conforming to what we understand to be reality. But that's going to generate a whole lot of questions. How many points is too many? When will this apply? Those sorts of things. These are all questions that are going to be answered soon. As I said, if the property portion of the Jones case turns out to be all that this case ever stands for, then this will just be a small blip on the radar of a broader screen of Fourth Amendment law. But if, in fact, this case stands as the first move towards either the adoption of a mosaic theory or, even more significantly, the elimination completely of the third-party doctrine, then U.S. versus Jones will indeed stand as one of the most significant, if not the most significant, Fourth Amendment case of the last 50 years.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.